At InDigital, we know that public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and we are about to get started with Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. We're doing this a little different this time. I'm actually on location here in Knox County, not Knoxville County. That was a blooper, but I had put that in there, and it was funny. Rob, who's sitting in back of the cameras and everything, ended up calling me out. He's like, "No, dude, it's not Knoxville County. It's Knox County." Yeah, if you heard him, that's Rob right there. But I am super excited today because I am here. We're going to be recording a new episode, and I'm here with Heather and Nugget. How's it going?
I am fantastic.
Awesome. So I am super happy to be doing this and all, and to be here and finally get to see the center and everything where Rob is now. But as always, how did everything start out? How did you start out in public safety to begin with?
Completely by accident, but I'm so glad that I did. Before I moved here from Wyoming, I managed hotels. And when I moved out here for family reasons, there really wasn't much of a need for hotel management. I happened to notice that they were hiring and came in, and I think it was my Where's Waldo shoes did it that sealed the deal for being hired.
Nice.
So it was just luck that I got the job, and I'm very, very, very glad that I did.
So then you don't come from like public safety at all. You just kind of jumped in.
Yes.
And did you do a sit along or anything, or how all did that?
I did. I came in and for a few hours, about 4 or 5 hours actually, I think, and sat in the center. And it was pretty busy the day that I was here as well. And even though it was overwhelming and watching some of the things that was going on, I was still pretty confident that it was something that I could do and something that I could handle myself.
So you're one of the lucky ones then, I would say. Lucky in the fact that usually when people come in for a sit-along, there's nothing going on. Nothing at all, but you actually had some stuff that was going on there, so you got to see it. How long were you doing the sit-along for? How long did you sit in?
About 5 or 6 hours I was here. Yeah.
I give that look because that right there, for me at least, that shows me how like dedicated and how much you were really interested in it. Because there's some times where people will come in and they'll sit for an hour or two and be like, "All right, well, I'm ready to go." And you're like, "Oh, I guess we might not see you later on." You know, a lot of people who have come in that I've done sit-alongs with will, they'll be there for about 4 or 5 hours, and they'll be asking questions and questions. What were some of the things that, I guess, really interested you, even during that time that you were doing the sit-along? Was there anything that surprised you, or?
I think the amount of different apps that are used, it was really fascinating to see all the different programs. The Texty, I don't think we had prepared 911 at that. We did not have prepared 911. But just watching the CAD and how the phone calls when they come in on rapid SOS where it shows the information, knowing that, watching how all your information can pop up when on rapid SOS. It's just stuff that I never thought of, never occurred to me until I sat in and watched. Watching everybody work together during like the high volume call times, that was really cool too.
Was there ever a time at all that you can think of where, you know, maybe you saw something on TV or in a movie, and then you see how it really works and you thought, yeah, that's not how it
works? Oh, 100%. Oh, 100%. Yeah, I was watching the latest episode of 911 last night with my husband, mm-hmm. and I was, the way that she answered the call, I was like, she's wasting so much time right now. If she would have just said, tell me exactly what happened,
right.
she would know what's going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, whether it's on TV or even sometimes in some of the audio that you hear from other places, it seems like there's not a full like standard on how people answer the phone. You know, sometimes they'll say with their agency name and, you know, what is it that's going on. I remember one time someone had said to me, you know, wouldn't you want the you know, the phone number first, or, you know, something else? I'm like, why would you want the address first? I'm like, you can give me all that information first all you want, but if you hang up and you don't answer me when I'm calling you back,
where are we going to send you?
Exactly.
Like, where are we going to send help if we don't know where you are?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, you always have to get that address and everything first. Now, do you feel like your time before this in working, you know, in hotels and stuff, that kind of prepared you a little bit for some of the stuff that you're dealing with now?
Definitely when it comes to customer service, mm-hmm. the customer service aspect, and keeping somebody calm, because working in hotel management, definitely had to keep people calm and stay professional.
Right.
Even though, you know, you've got the voice in the back of your head that's going, oh my gosh, this person just needs to knock it off. So I think that kind of mentality helps out here too, where you can stay professional and calm. And it is nice to not have somebody in front of your face. It's a little easier to keep them calm on the phone.
Right. Yes. No, I fully agree. Before I got into dispatching, my only, I guess, adult experience, I don't know how more so to put it, but was retail management. And I also, at one time, I managed a Blockbuster.
Does that age us?
Yes, that's why I looked at the camera like, yes. Yeah.
Rob.
Yeah, Rob too. He's like, what is that? Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yes, Blockbuster Video. Yeah.
It ages us.
Yeah, in Holland, Michigan, I at 18 years old. So I had recently graduated. A few months later, ended up, my fiance at the time had our son, and I went to work at Blockbuster, and she was managing a store already. And after 2 months, I don't know what it was, work ethic, whatever it was, I ended up becoming a manager. Like, we like how you work. We want you to be a manager. I was like, all right, cool. And then where's Blockbuster now?
Yeah.
It wasn't because of me. But a lot of the work that I did at Blockbuster and some of the retail stores that I managed, same as you. Like customer service, you got people in your face. They're pissed off because they're not getting their discounts, or they want to return something, and it's crazy. But when people are calling in on the phone, you end up digging back into those skills. So I'm glad I have it, which I'm sure you, the same way with customer service and everything else, you're glad you have that as well. Now, when you went through the hiring process and everything, what were some of the pieces there? Because I know in every center, it's different. Like for me, we had one of the tests that we had to take was, we're in this huge room, and there's like 30 or so of us, and the acoustics are bad as it is in there. You know, the sound is bouncing off the walls and everything, so there's echoes. But over the intercom, they played audio traffic between dispatch and an officer, and you had to write down what you thought they were saying. And that's how they narrowed it down to like 10. Now, for me, luckily, I had 3.5 years of experience already listening to, you know, officers eating their microphones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I had that. What were some of the tests that that you had to take, or even in the interview process? Was it one person, or was it a panel? How did that work?
I believe that I came in, and everyone's still short-staffed, but I believe it was extremely short-staffed. Mm-hmm. My interview process, was here for about 40 minutes, talking about myself, and I was very open to my fears about what, like, I might be afraid of. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be afraid that I might not handle it, or I might be afraid if I take a call that is just so heartbreaking that I'm going to have to step away for a minute. I felt like the interview was very well. Rob made it very clear the expectations of the job. He made it very clear mental health is a big, big thing. You know, we want to make sure that your mental health is taken care of.
Right.
Drug test. But honestly, my training.
She laughs at the drug test. I'm not sure that we can pass that.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Yeah, well, Wyoming is like hop, skip, and a jump from Colorado. So.
Right, right, right.
But my training was kind of fast tracked. Mm-hmm. We were very short staffed. So it was a lot of throw you in and not really sink or swim, because I definitely had people that were, they helped. And they were, patient with me, but my training was very fast tracked. I think after just a few weeks, we were so short staffed that it was just me and one other person at once.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So a couple things there. First off, with the drug test. So, I go back to this only because one of the dispatch centers that I was trying to get into at the same time as the one that ended up being the last one that I was at, finished off my career there, their drug test, when I went in, I remember I told them that, because they're like, do you drink like a lot of like energy drinks or like herbal teas and stuff? And I said, yeah, I do. And they're like, okay. And I said, why does that matter? And they said, well, just so that, you know, if something weird comes back,
it
we know what it is.
Your drug
that,
test.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, but we do ours a little different. And I said, okay, I'm assuming I'm not getting a cup. And he goes, no. And I said that too, because as he's talking to me, he pulls out a baggie and there's scissors and he puts on gloves. And I said, what are you doing? And he goes, I need to take a snip of your hair.
Oh.
Because we're going to run analysis off of your hair, because drugs stay longer in your hair follicles. And I said, oh, I was like, all right, cool. I said, well, okay, well, I just got it cut. I was like, I know it doesn't matter what I say, because I'm here for a job, but okay, I guess take off. And as I'm telling him where to go, he just takes a chunk out of the side of my head. I'm like, all right.
Was that your place in Florida?
No, this is in Michigan. Yeah, this would be in Southwest Michigan. And he's like, all right, I got what I need. I was like, I've got a patch. All right, cool. And he goes, you want the job, right? I was like, well, I didn't think I was going to have to sacrifice my look or anything. Not that it's much, but geez.
Imagine you guys all show up on your first day and you're all missing a patch of hair.
Yeah. It was like, this is your initiation. You've got the patch missing. This is how you know.
The one person shows up with a full head of hair and you're like, wait a second.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. So that was an interesting part there. But, you know, the training, you know, I'm the same way as you. So when I ended up going back to Southwest Michigan, I get the job where, in the county that I grew up in, actually, we were short staffed as well, to the point where they fast tracked it to. And that first weekend that I was on my own, I got forced in three times. I got forced for overtime while I'm working there. And it wasn't because people called in. It was just that's how short staffed we were. And they're like, Ricardo, we're going to put you in full time already. We think you're ready. How do you feel? And I said, do I have a choice? I said, because I don't feel like I'm fully ready. And I remember one of the trainers said to me, listen, you're never going to feel like you're fully ready when you're first going on your own. So you just got to jump in. We're still going to be there. You know, you lean on your people and everything. And I was like, all right, well, I guess let's do this. And then bam, overtime, all of those.
My favorite is whenever they're like, we have faith in you. I'm like, well, somebody should.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, because I don't know what to do right now. But
when you first start and every 911, you're like, please be an accident. Please be an accidental call. Like, accidental call, accidental call. And now you get the accidental call and you're like,
right.
No emergency. Yes. It was an accident. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. My first night, however, in dispatch, so I started dispatching in Central Florida. And the chief of police goes to my house, asks me if I still want the job. I tell him yes. And I was thinking I would be starting in a few days or the following week, you know, like a normal job. And he goes, no, you start tonight. And I said, okay, like, are you for real? And he goes, again, you want the job, right? And I said, well, yeah. And he goes, okay, will you come in at 10? So my first shift was a 10 p to 6 a shift. And I walk in, my trainer shows me everything. He takes a 911 call. And after he's done and I'm done observing him, because my heart's pumping already just watching him do it. And he goes, okay, well, you're next. And I thought he was joking, but he was not joking. And he kind of said the same thing that the other trainer said years later. You know, the only way you're going to learn is by jumping in. But I remember saying to him, there's nothing else. Like, there's really nothing else to this. And he goes, I mean, really, you got to be human. You got to have that thick skin and you have to use common sense. And I said, okay, well, so like you were saying, you know, you in the beginning there, you're like, please be accidental. That's exactly what my first call was. The very first call, I'm sitting there, my heart's just waiting for that first call to come up. And it rings, already sweating, answer, frostproof 911, where's your emergency? I'm like, oh, it was, I'm sorry, this was a butt dial. I'm like, yes, yes, a butt dial, thank you.
And then you're immediately followed by, oh, crap, now I have to do this all over again for an actual call.
Right. Yes, yes. Oh, man, it was something else. But, you know, I ended up actually going to a 40-hour, like, beginner class and everything after that. So it was good. Now, for you, when you are first starting out with this, and, you know, you're going through training, as you said, it was fast-tracked and everything. How was that set up? Because every center is completely different. Like, with mine, we had four different phases. So, like, the first one was geography and phones and encodes, you know, memorization of all that stuff, mapping and stuff. And then it's coupled with phones, but not emergency lines, right? And then we end up going to main law enforcement radios, which is nerve-wracking as well. And then we do our backup position, which was backup phones and backup radios. In Michigan, it's called LEAN. I'm not sure what it's called here in Indiana, but it's basically just the spot where you're running. IDEX, that's what it is, yes. Where you're running NCIC and all that other good stuff. And then the fourth phase is the shadow phase, where you're no longer on the umbilical cord, your trainer's on the other side of the room, and you're working like a well-oiled machine. And so how was it for you? How did that work?
It was very similar, except mm-hmm. for the whole shadowing thing. That was pretty quick.
Yeah.
About a week and a half, week and a half after I started. Again, because we had to fast track. But it was very similar. It was the geography learning. I'm not from this county, so I had to learn the roads and the different towns and the codes as well. And then we went to the admin calls. I was taking admin calls pretty quickly, and some of those admin calls turned out to be emergencies that I had to, you know, send over to my supervisor. Didn't get into my EMD or anything like that for a few months. Mm-hmm. So I'd already been taking 911 calls for quite a while before I was able to take my EMD. But it was exactly the same, the different phases set up. The only differences are shadowing.
So what was it like for you when you're taking those admin calls and one of them happens to be an emergency?
At the very beginning, instant panic. Because you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
They let you know that, hey, a lot of people will call the non-emergency line, not realizing that, yeah, you've got an emergency. So I was given the heads up about it, but you're just not prepared for it.
Yes.
Especially just starting out, and you take all these admin calls about dogs barking, or, you know, my neighbor's revving up his engine, and then you get, you know, the one guy that's like, I think I'm having a stroke. You're like, ugh. What?
Yes.
And those, yeah. And then you're just kind of like, I'm going to page some people out. I'm going to pass you on to my partner.
Yeah, because for those who are watching and listening right now, a lot of times when we're taking these calls, and the reason or the way that you would know, especially if you're on the other side of the room, if some crazy shit is about to go down or is going down, is when someone is typing real hard and fast. Yeah. Like you can hear it going on. And yes, exactly like that. And you're like, oh shit. I'm like, all right. So for us, like for me, if I was on main radios, I would pull up that complaint and I would keep hitting refresh, just to see when it would be coming in. And then later on, we ended up getting an updated CAD system where we didn't have to hit refresh. We would just open it up and watch it come in. But our first one was, it was all black with just like green text. It was basically like a DOS, an MS-DOS type. Yeah, it was an old one, but also our phone system was so old at that time, it didn't have caller ID or anything. So if somebody called and it was an emergency on a non-emergency line, if you didn't get that phone number for them right away, there's no way to call them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
What's caller ID?
You don't have a CAD?
There's probably people who don't even know what caller ID is. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So you end up getting fast-tracked through all of this. You're going through your training. But do you remember your first 911 call? And actually, before we get to that, either your first one or some of the earlier ones, how long have you been dispatching?
Not very long. I just started September of 21.
Nice.
So not very long.
Do you feel like you got a good handle?
Oh, definitely not. There's so much. There's so many things that I don't know. And there's so many programs that like I want to know better.
Right. Yes.
So and everything's changing all the time. Like I get the handle on something and hey, we've got this whole new program that's amazing. Oh, no, I love it. Like the Prepared Live app is phenomenal. And then we just got word that Texty has an upgrade now, so we've got to figure that out.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not that I don't have a handle on it, but everything's changing so fast.
Right. Yes.
And technology is changing so fast that just when I'm like, I got this, we get something new, and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't got this right now.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because when I was first starting out, it felt like, so I was confident in what I was doing, but it takes about two and a half years before you really, really feel like you're dialed in to everything. And then it's just, you know, like clockwork, like you're just doing the calls, going, running protocols, doing all this other stuff. And I say that also because when I first walked in to that central dispatch in Allegan County, the county that I grew up in, I walk in and I see everyone working. And this person is on a phone call. They are running radio. They're typing stuff in. They're also eating at the same time. And I remember thinking, shit, am I going to be able to do this? Like, this looks crazy. Like, this is like a job that an octopus, like if this was a Pixar movie, an octopus would be doing the dispatch job because it's all multitasking. So, you know, that's kind of how I felt coming into it. So, and it was a little overwhelming, of course, because it's 911. I mean, these are people's lives, you know, people are calling in during what is basically their nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's your voice that's there to help them through all of it from the beginning to the end of the call. So do you remember some of those, either the first call or some of the earlier calls that you took when you had first started?
I don't remember my first call. Mm-hmm. Earlier calls, I got a lot of suicide attempts, but there was one that really, a veteran had called. And he'd had a plan, and this was his last ditch effort. He called 911, and that just kind of got to me. He didn't really talk, and I told him, so you don't have to talk to me, that's fine, but I'm going to stay on the phone with you, and I'm just going to talk. You can listen. And I just talked about dumb things just to fill the air. I talked about skunks, and I talked about Alice Cooper, and got a couple chuckles out of him, but he just didn't want to talk. And that got to me because if he hadn't called, if he'd just decided to go forward with his plan, we would have gotten a completely different 911 call.
Right.
And that was I don't know what was going on at the time. It was around the holidays, but I mean, we'd gotten so many other calls that were similar or a little bit too late, a lot too late. And so that one call where the guy was just this veteran, this is my last ditch effort to try and get help. And that kind of stuck with
me. I think that's probably one of the best ways to do it. I remember, and what I mean by do it is taking calls like that from those who are calling in, asking, you know, for help that way, feeling suicidal and such. There was a trainer that I had, who's also, his name was Rob, which is interesting. But he is awesome. He's in Michigan. What's up, man? If you're watching, and he was probably one of the best trainers that I had, but also coworkers. Whenever a suicidal caller would call in, I would observe and I would watch and listen to him how he would do this. And basically, all the way back to my beginning, when that first trainer, Harry, told me that first part, you got to be human. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what he would do. And he would say, what kind of music do you like? What kind of movies do you like? And then he would just keep the conversation going and going. And sometimes the same way as you, you know, he would have a few, you know, kind of laugh with him or whichever, just a normal conversation, which it seems so simple, right, to think. And a lot of times people are calling because that's all they need is to hear a caring voice or have that connection or just simply talk about music or movies. And then help would get there. And he would get off the phone and I would just look at him and he's like, what? I'm like, dude, like, I want to be you. Like, like, that is amazing to be able to do that. And so that's awesome. I think that's probably one of the best ways. And you have that experience as well doing that, which is also why I think that some of the stuff that you did in your past helps for that. I'm a firm believer that a lot of stuff, either that we did in other jobs or just life experiences, help us with certain calls later on. Like, maybe that call was meant for you for some reason, because you might have been able to help that person out better than anybody else, because maybe you have an experience that nobody else had that you were able to talk to that person.
It's
definitely an interesting job.
For sure.
So how did Nugget get involved in everything that's going on here? Take me down this path.
So I've had him for, he's almost three. Mm-hmm. I've had him for 2.5 years. And I actually have several skunks at home. And he's the only one that is Tommy Chong. Like, he's the only one that's just, I mean, you see him, he's fallen asleep. He's like, whatever, I'm good. And I socialized him, and I actually use him for some like educational programs about skunks. And I'd asked Rob one day if I could bring him in, if it was okay with everyone else that I worked with. And I asked, and I don't think that they really, I think they were just kind of like, okay, that's fine. And he just, this is what he does. Mm-hmm. And there have been times where we've gotten bombarded with a lot of calls, and I think I have a video on my TikTok maybe where he's in my lap, and then I've got him up on my chest and I'm petting him and loving on him, and then he goes right back in my lap, and it's comforting. And I don't know why it's comforting, and it's also a little like kind of cool to know that I'm taking 911 calls with a skunk on my lap. Person on the other end doesn't know that. Like, they don't know I'm covered in tattoos. They don't know that I've got a skunk on my lap. Like, but I just kept asking if I could keep bringing him in. And he doesn't come with me all the time because he needs time away too. Yeah, you do.
That's funny that he looked up right at that moment. He's like, you're right.
Right?
I do need a little time.
What are you doing? What are you smelling? So when we're here, he gets junk food that he doesn't get at home. Mm-hmm. So I'll buy him a Happy Meal.
Nice.
I'll buy him a chicken nugget Happy Meal, and he'll eat the Happy Meal
Hence the name.
Yep, Nugget. That's actually how he got it. He stole my nuggets when we first brought him home. And it's just food that he doesn't get at home. So mm-hmm. he associates being here with really good things. And he knows the people that I work with. So he I could hand them over to somebody else here. Yeah. And he's like, it's okay. I know this environment. He potty trained himself here. So skunks are either potty or puppy pad trained or litter box trained. They're very clean animals. And he didn't want to use puppy pads here. So I started taking him outside. And in the summer, there's a big fluffy bush out there.
I think I saw the picture or a video actually. Yeah.
So in, well, the, there were people that were hiding their vapes over there. And I was like, my skunk poops there. That's gross.
We got work release.
Yeah.
Right beside our
So bones. They hide their vapes.
Okay. It's not just like an employee's hiding their vapes. It's like, I'm going to put this here. It's the people that come in for work release that are right next to community correction that are right next.
And they can't bring their vapes
right
in.
They can't bring their shit inside. So they hide it. And we have found them.
We throw them away.
We always grab them and throw them away. Yeah, their shit's expensive, but they're not supposed to have it.
That's true. This is
so
very true.
Hiding it behind there.
And at first they didn't, like, I don't know if they thought that maybe it was BS, and so they were using my sign to hide their vapes, and I was like, no, he really poops here. Like, he's pooping where you're putting your mouthpiece. Right. Like, that's gross.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Yeah. And he doesn't do that at home. He only goes outside here.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So... about how far into dispatching did you have this idea or suggestion to bring Nugget in? The reason I ask, too, is because of that call that you mentioned, was that before Nugget or after Nugget?
No, it was before.
Do you think there's some correlation there at all? What?
It might have been. Mm-hmm. It might have been. Because, I mean, at home, he's... I don't know how he knows, but when I'm upset at home, he just, and I'm just laying in bed and I'm like, ugh, I want to hide from the world.
Yeah.
He knows, and he just comes into my room and climbs up onto my bed and just does this. He's just like, yeah, let's just sit here like all day and do nothing. And it might have been. And it never occurred to me. I mean, he's a skunk. He's not a dog or a cat. And I don't want to push limits with him. And we have to have a certain, there's a lot of strict like laws with having a skunk, and I didn't want to break any of those, and they all know, DNR all know, they're fine with it.
So then I have to ask, what laws are there? Because this is interesting to me now as well.
So we do have to have permits for each of our skunks. Every year they have to have a vet sign off saying yes, they're healthy, they're being taken care of. DNR comes out to our house usually. Lately, they've just been texting me, hey, you good? Yeah, we're good.
Perfect.
But I think that's because they see all of the skunks on various social media.
Oh,
and,
right, yes.
So we have to, yearly, we have to touch base with them. If they were to, any of the skunks were to bite or scratch somebody, and it's reported, they are destroyed immediately. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. So if we were to take him to a vet and... his claws aren't sharp at all, but if he were to scratch a vet, they would destroy him. And that's terrifying. Because, I mean, look, this is...
He's just been chilling this whole time.
The laws, not every state, you can't have a skunk in every state. I think there's only 11, but I'm probably wrong on that. So he can't cross state lines with me. I'm in Indiana for the remainder of my youngest skunk will be one. So I'm here for at least 9 years if he lives to be 10.
Good Lord. It's like he's a drug or something. Like you can't.
Yeah. Can't cross state lines with him. I actually did have to reach out to DNR to find out if he could go with us to Illinois for an educational thing that they've got. And I mean, it was our DNR had to reach out to their DNR to see if it would be okay. And then like what kind of permits would be needed. Mm-hmm. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. And you know, it is awesome too, because I've been stressed out the past couple of days just with a lot of work that I've been doing and everything. And the moment that you gave him to me and he was in my arms, it's like he grabbed my arm almost like he was hugging me. I was like, how do you know I need this right now?
Yeah.
Like, Rob took a picture of me and I could see it in my face. Like, I was like a little kid. I was like, oh, look it.
he just does that. Mm-hmm. And he's just, his eyes rolling in the back of his head. And this is pretty much all he does. Mm-hmm. All skunks have different personalities, which is why he's the only one who usually comes with me. Pepe comes in occasionally if I work a short shift, and that's because he's very curious, so he wants to get into everything, and he's socialized, but he's curious.
Yeah, this isn't the only skunk.
I've seen a couple of videos, and I've only seen, I think it was Pepe.
Yeah.
So how many do you have?
Six.
You have six?
Yeah.
So in that room... We're
okay. You heard Emily screaming.
Yes, I did, which was awesome. And I might splice that in here so that you can see that too, because that was very cool. That was hilarious. And the look on your face too was even more priceless. But there's a video where I believe it's Pepe, you're telling him to go get into the wheel. You're like, go over there to the wheel and I'll put the camera on you. And he's just standing there for a moment and then walks over and gets into the wheel. And you say something like, I can't believe that worked.
I did. It was in a live that we were doing. And I had just moved the camera over to catch a couple of the other skunks. And he got off of the wheel and came over to me and was just like, hey. And I was like, well, I was going to, but you got off the wheel.
Yes.
Yeah. And when he got back on the wheel, I definitely was like, oh
he understood. Yes. No, that was amazing. Okay, so you have that many. So there's a question that I have to ask because I know my daughters were thinking the same thing. And that is the stinkiness or any spraying, because they said, you better be careful. You know, you might get sprayed or something. I was like, I don't know. I think it's domesticated. Like, I don't know how that works, but I have to ask. So how does that work?
So domestic bred skunks have to be descented before you get them. And they're descented around 2 or 3 weeks old by the breeder or, in our case, Indiana Skunk Rescue. She actually gets some from a fur farm in Iowa. That's still a thing. And it if you do a little bit of reading on it, it kind of stinks a lot. It stinks. So she rescues at least 30 a year from a fur farm, and then she adopts them out as pets, and that's where we got ours from. Three of our girls were all rehomed with us through Indiana Skunk Rescue. She reached out to us and asked us if we would be willing to take them because they had been, two of them were mistreated and then returned. So they had some grouchy issues. And then the third female she asked us to take, she was spayed, and she had a behavior change after she was spayed, which, yeah, she was a grouchy skunk, but she's not anymore either. My 13-year-old scoops her up and loves on her, and yeah, so it takes a little bit of time for undoing bad behavior to the skunks. That wasn't very articulate, but
no, but it makes sense though. It makes sense completely with all of it. Now, with all of the, you know, the coverage and everything that's been going on, have you had anyone call into 911 or an emergency line yet and say something like, "Is this the skunk person?"
I did.
Really?
So we used prepared 911, and there was a guy who'd found a truck that had been burnt out completely, and it was just abandoned. And so I'm staying on the phone with him on prepared 911, watching what he's seeing. And he's like, "You're the skunk girl, aren't you?" And it was like, and my first thought was, now, if you could see me, I could see why you would be like, "I know you."
Yeah.
But I'm like, "How do you know just from my voice?" He's like, "Because I watch TV." And I'm like, "Okay, I don't think I'd recognize my voice."
Right. Yes. Oh, that is
so
awesome.
So we chatted about that for a good few minutes while he waited for people to arrive.
Nice. So in some of the educational stuff that you were talking about, are you going around and, you know, teaching like 911 stuff as well as stuff with Nugget, or how is that working? Or is that something that you plan on doing?
I think that's something that we're planning on doing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, before it was just educational, using Nugget and Pepe our albino to for wild skunks. Yeah. You know, hey, this is information about wild skunks, what you do if you see them, stuff like that. And people would ask, you know, domestic questions as well. But I think with Nuggets, I mean, I call him my emotional support dispatcher, not really an emotional support animal.
Yeah.
But we talked about using him to get a bigger audience for people. Just kind of, hey, come meet Nugget, 42 PU. And my husband, yeah, my husband came up with that. I was like,
well,
man,
done,
you are
husband.
Genius.
Well done. Yes, 42 PU. Love that.
Yeah. So I think that that'd be, I mean, one of my partners, one of my coworkers was like, oh, I should have worn my shirt. It says Nugs, not drugs. And I was like, oh, that would have been so perfect.
Yes.
And I mean, it just, it'll, especially with kids, I think having him, it'll grab their attention a little bit better than, I mean,
yes.
We understand the importance of 911, but a 5 or 6 year old might not understand the importance of 911 as much yet.
For sure.
So having something that you usually run away from, but hey, you can pet him and you can like take a good look at what he looks like. And I mean, he lets me get all up in his grill. And he's so good to me. I don't know why he is, but he is. So like, I'll show kids like, oh, here's his teeth and his hands. And
he just chills. Yeah. He's just hanging.
That's because he knows he's going to get something good for lunch today.
He's like, as long as I be cool, they'll hook me up. That's right. See, he picked up his head. He's like, all right, yeah, no, here we go.
Is it lunchtime yet?
Yeah. So you've been doing this for a little bit now and everything. How fast would you say that it like really got into your blood? Because there's a lot of people who say that as soon as they got in and started taking calls or whatever, that it got into their blood right away, or there was a certain call that they took where they felt like, I'm in the place that I'm supposed to be. I'm in the right place.
I think it was pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was when I was still taking admin calls. And I think the biggest thing was, it's terrifying when you first start out, especially not having any back experience.
Right.
It's terrifying.
Yes.
And I never had that moment of, I don't want to go back. I never had that, I can't. I don't want to go back. I didn't have that this isn't for me moment. It was definitely a, oh crap, what's going to happen today kind of thing coming into work.
Right.
But I've never felt like I didn't want to come, like I didn't want to come into work.
Awesome. And then now as well with Nugget and everything, it adds a whole new layer to all of it. How do you feel though, that even in this amount of time that you've been doing this, how do you feel like the job has changed you? Do you feel like it's changed you at all?
Yeah. I guess I kind of don't dwell on things outside of work. Mm-hmm. And honestly, before I would put, I'm not to go back to mental health, but I would put my mental health on the back burner. I'd be like, you know, I'll get to it when I can. And working here, I'm not like, I'll get to it when I can. Working here, I'm like, yeah, no, I gotta take care of this right now. Like, I can't wait. If I notice something's going on, I'm immediately on the phone with my doctor. Hey, something's not right. I need to make an appointment. So I think that's one of the biggest things, is I put my mental health first working. Because if my mental health isn't where it needs to be here, how am I going to be at my best to help somebody else?
That is so perfect. And that also shows how much this job has changed, in the sense that there's a lot of us in the beginning, me included, that aspect of it was always on the back burner. It was always for everyone else, no matter who or what. And when it came to me, it was like, oh, I'll take care of it. And then it started building up and building up and building up. And then, you know, I'm kind of distant at home. I feel like I'm leaving it at work, but that's bullshit, because it's not there. Because when I get home, things are all different. So, excuse me. So then what helped me was being able to talk about it. And what I felt like was kind of killing me, eating at me in a way, of the job, was actually reverse. It was the opposite. It was actually the job that saved me, because I ended up going back to school. And when I went back to school, I was doing everything online, and all these major projects I was doing for about dispatch, because I would go and get my hair cut, and people would say, so what do you do for a living? And I go, oh, no. Should I say what it is that I do? Because I know what's going to come next.
Yeah.
And so I would say, yes, yeah, exactly. You know, what is your worst call? You know, what is this and that? And in the beginning, it would annoy me. But I changed my mindset after that. And I thought, you know what? Why am I getting annoyed by this? Maybe I should use this time as a way to educate the public mm-hmm. and actually tell them. And there were a few people that I actually told craziest calls. And they're just kind of there. And one, I thought, they're cutting my hair. I probably shouldn't have told them this because now they're freaking out. And then, you know, two, they would say, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And I said, well, you asked for my craziest call. And both times they're like, I meant like if someone got something stuck somewhere or, you know, crazy like that. And I said, oh, you mean outrageous. Oh, not crazy as in horrific. Oh, okay. But I ended up turning that into a way to talk more about all of it and then finally started putting my mental health first. So I'm glad that it's the reverse for you, where you are putting that, working here especially, and putting that first, because there's a lot of us who didn't. And there's still some places out there that don't really look at that. You know, they don't have a peer support team, or if there's a hard call that happens, they don't pull their people in to those debriefings, and they're just kind of left feeling alone. That's why I think conversations like this are so important, but also what you're doing with Nugget is important as well.
I remember when it wasn't too long ago, over the summer, I started a new medication, and it was a new antidepressant, mm-hmm. and it just affected me weird in the first couple days, so I stopped taking it, mm-hmm. and after another week or two, I'm like, no, I've got to start taking it. So I came in and told my partners, and I'd never said anything before, but I said, hey, guys, this is what's going on. I got this new antidepressant, started taking it. It made me kind of out, you know, a little bit loopy, and so I didn't want to take it while I was at work. And my partners were like, no, take it. You let us know. We know what's going on. Take it. So that was a big thing too. So now I'm kind of very open with them, whether they like it or not, where I'm like, hey, my medication got adjusted today. They're like, oh, it's about time. And I'm like, oh, why didn't you say something?
Right. So, I could have done it days ago.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you guys notice something, tell me. So that's really nice too, mm-hmm. that I'm completely comfortable talking to all of these guys about if I'm having a rough day, you know, like, hey, you're being quiet. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong. It's just one of those days. I don't know what's up. But I like that I can be that open with my partners and everybody that I work with. And I don't feel like there's any stigma here. I don't feel like they're not judging me for it. And yeah. I mean, some of my partners are like, yeah, don't worry. I get it too, because I'm the same. So that's been really nice to be able to be open about it. Or just, I mean, honestly, I've cried before and like, what's wrong? I don't know. I don't know what's wrong. Like, that wasn't a bad call. I don't know what's going on. I just need to get it out and I'll be good. And it's just really nice that with the people I work with that I can be that open. And I'm pretty sure that they can, you know, they feel the same, that they can be open with how they're feeling. Oh. That's really nice. I like, that's one of my favorite things about my work environment.
That's awesome. I love that, because like I said, there's a lot of places out there that don't have that level of openness, that people aren't talking. And even up to the point where before I started talking and stuff, that stigma was there. Like, nobody wanted to look weak. Nobody wanted to feel like, oh, you know, we can't hack it or whatever. Or someone say that or think that or whatever. But then I started talking, and then other people started talking, and then it just started building and building, and things are completely different there now. And but I almost feel like too that, you know, kind of thinking about the short staffing and such, that maybe if we were just able to talk a little more to each other, then maybe some of those people wouldn't leave. They would not be leaving. And the reason I say that is because I've seen on a lot of the some of the private dispatch pages on social media and stuff, people will just go on there and post and say, I went in today, guys, and I told my director, deputy director, whoever, that I was done. I can't do it anymore. And some of the stuff that they end up putting in there, it sounds like there wasn't really a connection there, or that people were not talking about certain things. And I just wonder that if, again, something very simple, you know, we're masters at communication, right, at this mm-hmm. job that we do. But when we go to talk to each other, sometimes, and I feel like if we were able to talk a little more and feel safe and comfortable,
yeah,
that maybe those people would stay. Maybe all they needed was to hear someone say, hey, how's it going? That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I agree.
Something we got to continue to work on. Yes, we have to continue to work on the communication part. Now, as we're going into the wrap-up of this episode, which has been awesome to be here with you and Rob, of course, Nugget, and to learn more about you and how all of this came about and everything. Now, you've only been doing this for this, you know, amount of time, but with everything that you know now, if you could go back to that time in the beginning to talk to yourself, what would you tell yourself?
Be more confident.
Yeah, right off the bat, bam, be more confident. Rob over there, not.
We've had that conversation.
Yeah.
Still.
We've had that conversation. Heather and I have had that conversation a lot. Apparently my folks think.
Okay. Especially not after Big Mac. Are you kidding?
Yes, Big Mac.
That's awesome.
She'll get down. You're doing fine. Be you gotta have yourself. That's what.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the. I'm not a tyrant. I'm not somebody that. I don't rule with an iron.
Yeah.
If you fuck up, you let me know. Up because then
and I do
because if you don't and then it comes down 2 or 3 days later that I get a call from a chief or something like that, it's like, hey, they did this, and then I have to go research and why they did it, then I'm pissed. But if they just come to me and it's like, hey, last night I botched this call, okay, cool, I'll look at it and say, this is what you did, and they know that. But so it's like, be calm, you're okay, everything's fine. Every time, like, yell at Heather.
She's like, am I fired? Every time. Like, yeah, I'm going to get fired for something dumb. I've called him before for something not related, but I'm like, hey, so I totally fucked up last night, but we'll talk about that later. Anyways. Right. And then I go into something and he's just like, what?
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, and you're right. Yeah. So it was funny to me, though, when I said the name to you and you're like, Big Mac, ha ha ha. I was like, that's the name he told me.
Are you kidding?
Like, that's his wrestling.
I told my husband, like, I'm so excited because I'm going to make all kinds of Big Mac shit. Well, it's not poking fun at. It's just like.
That's gone back to one of our first episodes that we ever did.
Yes.
Because we got onto the whole wrestling thing. Him and I are both huge wrestling fans. You know, we went to SmackDown. We sat front row. We like had the best time of our lives,
and awesome.
It's like the best thing ever. but that's been all along. We always talk wrestling, and that was the thing. It's like, and we were with Leah in Michigan, and it's like, well, if we had a wrestling, this is what it would be. She's the Thunderfoot Strangler.
Yes, Thunderfoot Strangler.
Exactly, and then
shout out.
Exactly, shout out to Leah. Woo! Yes. So, and then it's like, I was like, this has been a long time ago. I'd be Big Mac, and I would have my. This would move as like my I'd have your jersey. My special move is going to be the Big Mac attack. And my manager
That's right.
was the special sauce. Was special sauce.
Special sauce. Yeah, the manager was the special exactly. sauce.
I think for me it was like, you know, if you see it, you're like when you were in high school, you'd see your teacher out and like. Someone's calling them by their first name. You're like, what?
Right.
No. I think that's what it was with, like, I was like, what?
Big Mac, yes.
Rob is a person outside of being a director.
Yes. Well, so here's one funny thing that I'll say really quick. And there was one time we were hanging out and Rob had lost a bunch of weight. And I was like, dude, you look amazing, man. And he's like, thanks, man. I you know, I've been doing this and that. And I was like, yeah. I was like, you're not Big Mac anymore. You're just like a double cheese. I was like, you're still delicious. Oh, man, that's so funny. So as we go into the wrap-up of this episode, again, it's been awesome to have you on, both you and Nugget and Rob. Thank you so much for allowing me to come in and do this. For anyone who is looking at possibly bringing in a support dispatcher, what is some advice that you have for them, whether it be a skunk like Nugget or, you know, a dog or cat or whichever? You know, what are some of the things that that you would say to them, you know, tips, whatever?
We do have I have a partner who brings her dog in frequently as well. Obviously, make sure everybody is on board with it, because you might have somebody who just isn't, it's not their thing.
Right. Allergies too.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, by all means, make sure that this is, I consider him coming to work too. So he gets lunches with me and he is spoiled rotten, so that this is a place that he wants to be. So make sure that environment is set up for whatever animal you're bringing in, so that animal is not stressed out and feels safe. And yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously is not stressed out at all.
He's just like so relaxed. He's just chilling. I wish I could be that relaxed. Look at him. He's just like goes down. Yep. I wish I could just be that relaxed and just chill. I'm going to have to take from Nugget here and see how he does things. But for those who are watching and listening, how can they find out more about you and Nugget and everything that you do, social media, whichever? How can people find out more about you?
So I do have Wyo Tattoo Mama on TikTok and on Instagram. And I have all of my skunks are on there. It's not all 911. It's mostly my skunks at home being goofballs. I do post quite a few things of Nugget on our Knox County Central Dispatch, which is KnoxIN911, and that's also on Instagram and on TikTok. And we are on Facebook as well for 911. I'm not on Facebook, and I refuse to get back onto Facebook. I've been off for almost three years, and that is a huge, awesome deal for me. So I'm like, now I'm good.
Very well done. Awesome.
And anyone who's interested in a state where they're legal, Indiana Skunk Rescue in North Salem, Indiana, she is phenomenal. Like I said, she gets hers from a fur farm. And I mean, not to get into that, but they are bred for different reasons, all kinds of reasons. And the fact that these guys are going to a home to be a domestic pet versus the alternative is pretty amazing. And she's just knowledgeable, and she does wilds as well. And so she's somebody to reach out to for more information. She's got a lot more information than I do. She's got a lot more experience than I do.
Perfect.
On domestic skunks. If anyone's interested in domestic skunks.
There you go. Awesome. Well, thank you both for being on this episode of Within the Trenches. And I just
thank
love
you
everything
for coming
that you're
down
doing.
Here.
Yes. No, this was awesome. This has been very, very good. So for all of you who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you guys want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. This episode, which I didn't say in the beginning, and I apologize, has been sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Shout out to patrons and Facebook subscribers. And just thank you for everything. This can be seen on YouTube, LinkedIn, as well as Twitter and Facebook. And then you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye, guys.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.